Hi, I'm Lise Wheel, and this is Wheel of Justice. Well, you know, we've been talking about the 20th anniversary of the OJ acquittal. We've talked to a reporter, we've talked to some experts who've testified. But what's been bugging me all along is I wondered, did the OJ Simpson dream team, did they think they had to go with a plan B? Did they need somebody to maybe represent OJ at the appeal? And of course, I did a little digging and found that, of course, Professor Alan Dershowitz was just that man. He was going to be representing OJ if there was an appeal. Now, I can barely stop giggling with having a Professor Dershowitz here on the program, Wheel of Justice, because he's a big, fancy Harvard lawyer, was for many, many years, constitutional law and criminal law, and a professor at Harvard, where I graduated from. So, boy, he's just like, you're like a rock star, Dr. Dershowitz.
Professor Dershowitz. Well, I appreciate that. I was what OJ called the God forbid lawyer. God forbid he should be convicted. I was going to argue the appeal. Of course, he wasn't convicted. So I did play a role in the case. I argued several motions in court, and I wrote many of the briefs and sent material to Bob Shapiro and F. Lee Bailey and, of course, the chief counsel. And they would rely on the briefs I wrote to make the arguments that they made in court. So I played a role in the case. It wasn't a major role, but it was a significant role. And then I wrote a book about it called Reasonable Doubts.
Well, the dream team then, they thought they might lose this thing, right, if they had to hire you. I mean, I don't mean to put it that way, but really that's the truth.
There's no question about that. I mean, right. Every criminal lawyer always thinks they're going to lose. You know, I think only about 5% of cases are won at trial and about 2% on appeal. So when you're a criminal lawyer, you're used to losing. I have a, you know, without being too arrogant, I have a far, far better record than that. I win a great many of my appeals and my trials. But you have to always be prepared to lose, particularly a trial, particularly where the evidence was as massive as it was against O.J. Simpson, blood evidence and other kind of evidence and motive evidence and prior history. So we certainly had to prepare for the possibility of an appeal.
Now, I've read that you were hired to shut up. What does that mean?
Oh, that was ridiculous. That was a crazy view that it was expressed. I don't know why. I was hired because I was told that when I was hired, it was a death penalty case, and I'm an expert on the death penalty. And I was hired because of my expertise in criminal law and my expertise in appeals.
Okay. If it had come to an appeal, how would you have defended him?
Well, it really depended on the nature of the conviction. If it was a first-degree murder conviction, we would have argued the sufficiency of evidence. I think we would have lost that issue. But we also would have argued about the introduction of evidence. They introduced into evidence a glove that was searched improperly. There were a lot of errors in the case that we could have focused on for appellate purposes. The big issue would have been harmless error. That is, there was so much evidence of guilt in the case that there was a risk that the court could have found error but said, look, he would have been convicted anyway. You know, courts are not in a good position, appellate courts, to assess harmless error because they're not in a good position to know the dynamic of what was really going on. Very few people thought we were going to win this case at trial, and we ended up winning.
Now, you just mentioned you were there for the glove scene. Right. I mean, I remember watching that as well, and I didn't know that much about that law. Well, I had graduated from Harvard, so I guess I knew something. But at that point, I couldn't believe it. I mean, what was it like sitting there in the courtroom and watching this, and could you believe that Chris Darden was actually having the defendant try to make the prosecution's case?
It was the biggest blunder I've ever seen in a courtroom. It was a remarkable coincidence that I was in the courtroom that day. I just happened to be there. It was one of the only 6 or 7 days I was in the court, and that was the day that the glove was tried on. The beginning of the day was boring, boring, boring. It was testimony about how gloves are made, and then suddenly Darden asks O.J. Simpson to try it on, and it doesn't fit. He walks up to the jury. He says it's too small. So he basically got to testify without being cross-examined. And, of course, what a lot of people didn't realize is that under California law, Darden could have made him try it on outside the presence of the jury first to see if it fit before he did the experiment in front of the jury, and he was so arrogant that he didn't take advantage of that provision of California law, and as the result, the jury, you know, saw it not fit, and it led one of the defense lawyers to come up with the term, you know, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
So wait a second. So you're saying under California law,
yep,
the prosecution, that is Chris Darden, could have asked O.J. to put this glove on outside of the presence of the jury,
right,
to kind of,
yeah,
test his evidence.
That's right.
And they didn't take advantage of that.
No, because they were so arrogant and they decided they could do it in front of the jury. And you never do that. If you have an opportunity to test your evidence first, of course you're going to do that first.
Sure. You don't ask the defendant to make your case.
We didn't win this case. They lost it. You know, we were a pretty good defense team, but they were an abysmally poor prosecution team. And if people are upset at the verdict, don't be upset at the defense lawyers. We did our job. Be upset at the prosecution lawyers. They did not do their job.
You mentioned tampering with evidence. What do you think was tampered with? What evidence was tampered with in this case?
Well, I know for certain that the sock was tampered with. They found a sock that belonged to O.J., and Officer Van Adder took the sock, laid it out flat, and poured the blood of O.J. Simpson and one of the victims onto the sock. And we proved it because the blood on the sock had EDTA, which is an anticoagulant chemical not found in the human body but found in test tubes. So it was clear that the blood had been poured from a test tube. Also, the blood made a mirror image on all four sides of the sock, and just use common sense, if you're wearing the sock while it gets splashed with blood, it wouldn't have mirror image stains on all four sides because the leg would intrude. But if it were laying flat and you poured the blood on the sock, it would cause four mirror image exact replicas of each other. So we were able to prove conclusively that that piece of evidence was tampered with, and the jurors believed it. And what the jurors basically said to themselves, if the prosecution could have created, manufactured one piece of fake evidence, who knows what else they may have done. So they acquitted because they had a reasonable doubt.
But now why would the police be after O.J.? Why would they be trying to frame O.J. Simpson?
Because they thought he was guilty. They thought he was guilty. They were convinced he was guilty, and they were convinced he'd get away with it because they thought that he would probably get the glove suppressed. So they manufactured a piece of evidence that they thought would convict an innocent, a guilty person. So, you know, if you accept that theory, they believe they were framing a guilty person.
Let's get to the media and the change in the media. You've written a lot about this, the impact of the O.J. trial on the media and court coverage. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that, your feelings on that.
Well, it changed everything, the O.J. case. It was the first gavel-to-gavel coverage of a major trial, and it got a lot of Americans interested in the legal system. It was not the best case to present to them. The judge was not the best judge to present the legal system in its best possible light, but the case was so fascinating that people all over the world watched it. And now we have gavel-to-gavel coverage of many, many trials, and it's a good thing because it allows Americans to see how their legal system operates. I don't know whether or not other countries have adopted this approach, but in America, the legal system is open to the public. Now, it has some negatives, too. Cases are settled because people don't want their case to be on television, and it has an impact on the dynamic of the trial. But on balance, I think it's a good development in a democracy.
What impact has the case had on you? Forget about the media for a minute.
Some short-term impact. When I was in the case, particularly when we won the case, I got a lot of hate mail. My mother got hate mail, threatening letters, that kind of thing. People hated the fact that we won the case. If we had lost the case, they would have said, oh, they're good lawyers, they did a good job, but justice was done, but a lot of people think justice wasn't done, and they took it out on the lawyer. So there was a lot of hatred. I got some speeches canceled. I got some clients who didn't want me to represent them, but it has had no long-term effect on my life. My career has been very successful, and I've been, you know, very happy as a lawyer, so it's had no impact, neither positive nor negative. It's not been my most important case, and it's not been my most difficult case.
In looking out over all these cases and studying them and talking about them, commenting on them, writing about them, what do you think makes a case a big case that the media is going to cover?
Well, it really depends. First of all, if it's a celebrity, it's a big case. And O.J. Simpson was a major celebrity in America, not in Europe. You know, Mike Tyson, who I represented, is a much bigger celebrity around the world because boxing is an international sport. American football is local to America. So celebrity is very important. Whether or not there's kind of a romantic angle in the case, sex appeal, money, wealth, all of those things. And then kind of whodunit. I mean, did he do it? Did somebody else do it? All of those things make for great cases. I wouldn't say this was one of the great cases of the 20th century. It was probably the most highly publicized case of the 20th century, but there have been many, many more important cases.
I would agree completely with that. You have written and said that most of your defendants are guilty. People that you represent are guilty.
Statistically, that's the case. Look, in the American system and most Western systems, we don't charge innocent people. You know, thank God most of my clients have probably been guilty. You don't want to live in a country like Iran or maybe China, where most people charged with crime may be innocent. So it's a virtue, a good thing, to say that most people who are charged with crime, particularly when they get to me as an appellate lawyer, are probably guilty. Fortunately, I've had my share of innocent clients, including several who have been on death row whose lives I've saved. And so it's very gratifying to save the life of an innocent person. It's also gratifying to save the life of a guilty person.
Why?
Because I don't believe in the death penalty. And if I can save the life of somebody who's about to die, I've done something positive, I think.
Okay. Having said that most of your defendants are guilty, was that the case with O.J.?
You can't ever comment on the guilt or innocence of a particular client. Everybody has the right to make that judgment for themselves. The system found him not guilty, but the system isn't history. Historians have a right to make their own judgment. Every member of the public has a right to make their own judgment.
Professor Alan Dershowitz, I'm so happy you took some time to be in Wheel of Justice.
And
because when we passed cross and passed in law school, I ran like a little bunny, scared, because you are Mr.
You're
Professor Alan Dershowitz of Harvard Law School. Come on.
Hey, I'm just Alan. I grew up in Brooklyn. So I'm an ordinary guy.
Thanks, Alan. I grew up in Brooklyn.
Nice to talk to you.
I'm Lise Wheel for Wheel of Justice. Till next time.